Haider Rida is one of our superstar faculty members in electrical and computer engineering. And is one of the faculty members that for a while just does really great stuff in their area. And all of a sudden, the area becomes super hot. And now you're a star of radio programs and teams, coaching teams for international competition, and in such high demand as we think about looking at the Canvas, which is our connected and autonomous networked vehicles for active safety Canvas project. So what's the difference between a connected vehicle and an autonomous vehicle? What's that difference mean?
Great question. So really we have these two different technology areas that are emerging rather independently right now. So one of them has to do with autonomous vehicles. And autonomous vehicle is basically a vehicle that could sense, perceive, and maneuver around its environment without being connected to other vehicles, without communicating with the other vehicles. So that's pretty much the primary focus of the industry and a lot of the research going on in academia right now. Now, then we have this another universe, if you will. It's the universe of connected vehicles, where vehicles could communicate and send messages to each other. Those vehicles could be driven by human driver, just like, you know, today. So the messages could serve to warn human drivers that other vehicle going to come, you know, across an intersection, for example. Now, the technology associated with connected vehicles, which basically rely a lot on the same technology we use for wireless communication and Wi-Fi that we have, you know, in our, you know, very commonly in our places. So that technology actually is very mature, and in fact, there is a standard, and NHTSA, which is the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, have made issued a recommendation for automotive companies to embrace and support this connected vehicle technology within, let's say, 4 or 5 years. So that's going on, and we hope, in fact, that's one of the things that we're trying to do within Canvas, is to bring these two technology areas together, because they will be significantly more powerful together than, you know, being developed on their own.
We were talking before we came on air about some national competitions that our students are taking place in. Yeah. Talk about those students. They're here training. They're having unbelievable hands-on experience in this design work. When they're done at Michigan State, where do those students go on to in order to gain employment?
Well, for one thing, we're actually trying hard to recruit them for graduate school.
Okay. Keep them here.
We try to keep them as long as we can. In fact, I mentioned some of the students who are participating in the NHTSA International Competition, and they will be one of they're representing MSU, and of course MSU is one of the three schools will be representing North America.
When a student group, you work with students, these are undergraduate and graduate students, and so part of their project is to learn to not take things from the classroom and put it into practice. So what is their project? What did they demonstrate that got them into this international competition? What did they do?
It's a very inspiring and amazing story, frankly. Those students actually in the NHTSA competition. So we have two competitions. Okay. So one of them is the NHTSA competition, which has to do with enhanced vehicle safety, ESV. So that's an international competition, and NHTSA go through multiple phases where they select schools who should be part of the competition from each continent based on proposals. And then they go another round where they actually interview and meet with the students, and the students need to demonstrate some kind of prototype about some of their ideas, and then they will select the finalists. So that's one competition. We have another competition, which is sponsored by GM and the Society for Automotive Engineers, SAE. That competition, also very highly selective, was announced last year. And then GM and SAE, just a couple of weeks ago, they actually announced 8 schools from North America to compete over 3 years. This is a long-term competition, and MSU is one of those 8 schools.
But what would be part of the project? What does the project look like? I do a prototype to have a car not crash into one another, or to figure out that there's really snow underneath me and not pavement or gravel? What's sort of the right. What did they do?
Right. So let's start from actually some of the graduate level type of research. So there we're really trying to focus on a lot of compelling and challenging problems that industry, frankly, are not looking at right now. We're looking really beyond, mm-hmm. you know, many of the things that the industry is very much focusing on right now. So an example is what I call it is lineless driving. A lot of the technology for autonomous vehicle, including, for example, some of the early ones adopted by Tesla, for example, was basically based on detecting lines on the road and staying within the lane. Now, that, you know, doesn't work very well in many scenarios within Michigan when you have, right. you know, leaf in the fall or when you have snow. So we actually started working on this problem, last year. And our graduate student did a phenomenal job. Actually, we did a very early stage demo of the ability to drive autonomously on the snow. It's in a fence area, but it really attracted a lot of attention and truly shows.
It's in the president's speeches.
Yes. We're trying to stay away from politics, I guess. You know?
No, it's my speeches. My speeches. I use that as an example about how smart things are doing.
I heard about that and appreciate the recognition there was even some articles written about it and
But if you think about the challenge for a moment of all of this, because we are very visual when we drive, and so the idea that you some sensor would find a line is really an extension of sight to drive, right? Mm-hmm. And we all struggle in the winter. With our sight and getting the car in the right spot. And so it's really fascinating to me sort of how you use a different kind of sensor or combinations of technology that are really novel to be able to do what seems like a very simple task.
Absolutely. So this is what very interesting about this whole new area, because now we're really talking about different type of sensors, exactly what you mentioned. Which is include, right now one of the most interesting technology is based on laser. And this is a technology of the sensors known as LADARs, with, first letter L as in laser. Mm-hmm. And it's basically, you could think about it as the version of radar, but with using laser. The thing about LADARs, they are incredibly precise in mapping the environment and basically telling the vehicle how far it is from all the different objects that surround it. So if you have buildings, other vehicles, pedestrians, trees, anything you could imagine. So that technology actually is what driving a lot of these capabilities as we move forward in this area of autonomous vehicle. Of course, radars play a very significant role. And radars, traditionally been used for pretty basic stuff, for example, blind spot, detection type of, for vehicles and so on. But one of the really interesting things we're finding right now is that some of the sensor technology, such as the cameras and LADARs, they could actually fail under very challenging weather conditions, fog or heavy snow. So radars will serve as a very kind of robust safety net for detection of other objects. One of the really interesting problems we're working on at MSU is trying to actually get the radar to the level of capability of recognition of objects, such as vehicles and pedestrian, the same level we could recognize objects using cameras. And that problem is very, very challenging. And one of the wonderful things, MSU for decades have a very strong pedigree in the radar area, one of the top in the nation. And now it's even more top.
Radar and antennas.
Radar and antennas, exactly. So
when you're working on projects, I'm a brainstormer by trade. I love to sit around and think about different aspects. Would you say that the positive things that are coming out are solution-based, where you have an item that can solve problems, so then you go out and seek the problems that your solution can solve? Or are they problem-based, where you bring up problems and then go try to find the solution to fix the problem?
Excellent question, and it's really both ways. So we have, if you look at the the potential benefits of autonomous driving is just really phenomenal. I mean, you could start from safety, where you could really save literally worldwide maybe about 1 million lives a year. And you could talk about injuries, which we have, some of the estimates, just the U.S., you have about a minimum of 2 million a year of injuries due to human error, and, you know, that lead to crashes. Now, there is a huge economic ramification for this. The estimate's about $200 billion a year due to hospitalization, due to damages and property and, you know, vehicles and so on. So there is a whole set of benefits. And, of course, there is, like, benefits related to energy saving and things related to productivity and so on. So there is a whole laundry list, if you will, of benefits that we foresee that's going to happen. And frankly, they're very compelling. And that's a big driver for why autonomous driving is receiving so much attention. And now, of course, with that comes a lot of challenges. And that's also driving a lot of the problems we're looking at. I mean, you're looking at anywhere from how does the insurance industry going to deal with this? You know, we're going to move a whole different, you know, model in terms of, you know, how we're going to do, you know, the policy, the laws. That's just non-technical issues. And, of course, the technical issues are really also very profound, frankly. I think one of my favorite example is, you know, people talking about, you know, we're going to do better with autonomous driving than a human. I frankly believe strongly we have not even reached the level of competence of human driving yet. So we need, because we humans are so good at recognizing our environment when we drive. One of the example that we could think of, if you're driving and you recognize there are pedestrians around you. Now, the industry right now in terms of autonomous driving, they're focusing on detecting pedestrians. However, we are not at the stage of actually distinguishing between, is this pedestrian an adult,
right,
or a child, right, that is walking by him or herself unattended? We humans recognize these situations very quickly, and we respond in the way we drive just naturally.
Right.
And we need to get to that level of...
Because there could be volatility in how they respond to the situation, and we can anticipate that.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you know, a classical example, if you see a ball running across the street and you're going to step on the ball, now we immediately say, well, there is probably someone going to run after or chase after the ball, and we react to that and become very cautious. So we need to get that level of understanding and recognition of our environment.
If you and I are talking, the three of us were doing an interview, let's say 5 years from now, and your dreams about connected vehicles, autonomous vehicles were coming true, what would the campus look like if we were thinking about that being sort of autonomous, connected vehicles? What would be different?
Excellent question. So I think right now there are, actually the year 2021 is a magic year. Why? Because in 2016, many announcements were made 5 years from 2016. So we anticipate there will be some level of autonomous vehicle around. Most of it could be in the form of ride-sharing, ride-hailing kind of technology. In fact, Ford made that announcement that they're going to make those kind of capabilities in autonomous vehicle in 2021. The capability would be in what's known as geofenced areas.
Mm-hmm.
So the vehicle really knows its environment, at least from the static point of view. It knows the buildings, knows the roads, knows the intersections. It knows the path pretty well, but then it needs to react, of course, to the dynamic aspects where you could have other vehicles, mm-hmm, and pedestrians and so on. So I could envision actually some of those capabilities, which is kind of in a geofenced area within the campus, let's say maybe the West Circle, maybe, you know, the East Circle, you know, some parts of the campus may have autonomous vehicles supporting maybe students and faculty, you know, with some basic mobility, services. Now, you know, the connected part actually could be also very compelling in terms of enabling a whole new host of mobility within the campus, in terms of even scheduling classes where it's kind of optimized trying to minimize delays for students to go from one classroom to another. So possible. There are a lot of possibilities 5 years from now, but I think if we go beyond that, the possibilities will be even much more.
Do you have any trepidation being in an autonomous vehicle?
Frankly, this is the trillion-dollar question, maybe. So there is a big issue with acceptance. You know, how much really people are going to accept this technology, how much going to embrace it. My take on this, we're going to have a very diverse reaction and response to this technology. And in fact, we know now the millennials, you know, generation. They really do not prefer to drive. I mean, that's the least. And I think there will be a major group of, you know, population that's going to embrace this technology. Once the technology is really demonstrated in a very robust and safe way, and, you know, people, if you think about what's going on with Tesla, I mean, Tesla is right now demonstrating a very basic level of autonomy. It's known as actually level 2, and what we're trying to get to is what's known as level 4. People, you know, buying Tesla, and they use the autopilot despite the fact they know there is a possibility for, you know, fatal crashes. I mean, and they still, you know, do it. So I think there will be, you know, different segments of society that they will embrace the technology with different level of acceptance. And I think it's just going to be one of those things that, the whole society is going to get used to over the years and maybe over the next decade or two.
This is fascinating. I think, you know, as you look at so many transitions in life, there are things where people say, I'll never trust it, I'll never get there, and then they become almost the norm. It'll be interesting to watch when 2021 and beyond comes along that, I mean, the technology is there now, but the more it gets accepted, it really opens up your eyes of other possibilities beyond just transportation.
Absolutely. And if I may add, there is actually one study that published recently by McKinsey and Company. It predicts that by year 2030, we'll have about 15% penetration of autonomous vehicles. Now, 15% may sound like a small number, but actually if you consider by then, we might be approaching about 2 billion vehicles worldwide. So the number could be very large. Now, even if you just focus on the U.S., right now we have about 260 million vehicles on the road. So even if 15% still is pretty significant by 2030, this is actually going to be one of the most challenging aspects of this whole technology era, is what we call it is really the transition. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're going to have this mix of vehicles driven by human, which are not connected and not autonomous. You know, some vehicles will be driven by human and they are connected, and there are some vehicles which are fully autonomous. That hybrid is going to be really very challenging, and it's going to take probably, frankly, maybe 2040 or so beyond until we have, you know, much more dominant autonomy.
Now, Michigan, because of Willow Run and the Planet M project, wants to be the epicenter of translating the very sophisticated research that you all are doing in the laboratory, the projects that our students are engaged in that hopefully they'll win internationally, very practical problems, including large vehicles. So we've talked a little bit about cars, and most of the autonomous vehicles that you see right now are smaller cars, are not big cars. Tesla's not too small, but they're not. But there's also this place that people believe that trucks can really, and transportation can be enhanced by the equivalent of autonomous semi-trucks. And that there's a big interest at Willow Run in working in that area.
Absolutely. And in fact, you know, the autonomous trucks type of, you know, movement, if you will, it's already taking place. And in fact, there has been some, testing and announcements of, having trucks, you know, driving platoons, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I think Willow Run would be a tremendous asset for the state of Michigan in terms of testing these different capabilities, and having the ability to actually go at highway speed is very pivotal in order to really fully test this technology. And, you know, adding complexities such as you know, trucks and even buses and, you know, other type of vehicles, you know, lightweight, medium weight, you know, other, you know, any kind of weight you could imagine. Again, that heterogeneity is also going to be very challenging. But the whole truck industry, actually, we have two industries which are maybe been under the radar in terms of they don't get the publicity they deserve in terms of being almost pretty autonomous, the mining industry and the farming industry.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they've been actually pretty advanced in their autonomous capabilities. Of course, they're going to benefit a lot from all the new technologies being developed, mm-hmm. you know, outside their industries. And that's going to be really very interesting. I mean, in fact, the study I was reading earlier this week, in fact, over the weekend, I should say, they were showing actually some of the benefits of using autonomous driving in those two industries, the mining industry and the farming industry. And there was a reduction in emission, carbon dioxide emission, by 60% just from using the vehicles in those two industries. Now imagine you take that benefit and you translate it to, you know, more than a billion vehicle around the world. Mm-hmm. That's something triggered my mind when we were talking about this other industry.
Well, I've been in, you know, combines and other farm equipment where it sort of drives itself. I mean, you can literally program the computer and sit there and listen to music and read a book, and the thing will find the corners. It will figure out the right rows to hit. It takes soil temperatures. It takes conditions, so it adds a little bit more fertilizer here when it thinks it needs it. It's pretty remarkable, because it would take two or three passes sometimes to make each of those decisions independently. Mm-hmm. But right now you said there are convoys of trucks on the road that are semi-autonomous or autonomous?
They're called platoons. So this is something being
I want to know if I can find what would look like.
Well, some of tests have already taken place in Europe, and I believe some of the you know well-known manufacturer like Mercedes and so on, they have been in fact kind of taking the lead in
but
this.
Autonomous doesn't necessarily mean not having a driver in the cab. That's
point.
The thing. It's like the tractor,
right? Absolutely.
And essentially, the farm example.
Absolutely.
People sit there because it's still not a perfect technology.
Absolutely.
And in the middle of it, the rain may start or something needs to be adjusted on the computer to make sure that we're
Absolutely.
Doing it correctly.
Absolutely.
But it still means that you can work longer.
Absolutely.
You're much more efficient in your work. The machine can go longer, and because it's less tiresome for you in terms of attention spans.
Absolutely, and this is one of the number one issue that we hear a lot about. You know, the trucking industry is that the drivers actually are very have a sleep deprivation, mm-hmm. and this kind of technology can really help them significantly. And we always, sometimes I get asked a lot, do we have a human sitting behind the wheel or inside the vehicle? And I said, yes, absolutely, for many years to come. And I think, frankly, I'm one of the people who believe that even if we're going to have fully autonomous vehicle, I think manufacturers are going to have to give the choice mm-hmm. to consumers where they could drive manually or autonomously, and I think there will be maybe
it's like autopilot on an airplane, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Right.
So there will be a substantial segment of society who would like to have that option, but then at the same time, you hear there will be autonomous vehicle that doesn't have any steering wheels and no pedals and so on.
Are there offshoot industries that this technology people are thinking about? We have this for the vehicle world, mm-hmm. but. As you get that technology built, we start thinking of things. It could be used here. It could be used there. I'm immediately thinking of the little robot that vacuums your carpet without.
Absolutely. In fact.
Or the one that mows your yard
for
you.
Mows your yard for you.
Yeah, there's even a bigger one now that would do a lot more space in your yard.
I saw something in Madison that is a it's like the size of a trash can, and it brings your food to you for lunch.
Yeah.
Have you seen that one?
Yep. Yeah.
But it's based on the same a little bit cruder, but same technology, I'm assuming.
Absolutely. And in fact, this whole area in, humanoid, right? Mm-hmm. So in robotics, that robot that almost resemble a human in terms of their interaction, this is the area we're going to really benefit significantly from that overlap in terms of the technology. It's all about sensing your environment.
Right.
It's about recognition, understanding the need of people around you. Because one of actually the other interesting thing that we're working on at MSU, actually, which I forgot to mention, is we're really not only working on sensing the external environment of the vehicle. We're working on trying to sense and really address the need of the occupants of the vehicle. Now, we're not going to have drivers, but we're going to have people. I mean, envision a case where an occupant may get into a health emergency. The vehicle should be able to actually sense that and literally just drive that person maybe to an emergency room.
Sure.
Or, you know, maybe drive them to, you know, to the nearest pharmacy to take their, you know, blood pressure pill or, you know, whatever they need, you know. So there are a lot of, you know, possibilities there.
So if you think about the way that you and your colleagues have put together Canvas, it's both connected and autonomous vehicles, having them talk to one another, networked and connected with their environment, not just connected as a vehicle, but connected to their environment. But the purpose is safety.
Right.
And understanding the human condition with that, which is very land grant, but also to give us a better understanding about how to build infrastructure around us.
Absolutely.
So it's not simply about the car.
Mm-hmm.
It's about all of the infrastructure that surrounds the car in order to be able to make it safer. And that could be a vehicle that looks just like a car today and has a driver and everything else. So it's not just for driverless vehicles. It's for all of us to benefit from that technology, even if we choose to have a steering wheel and pump our brake in the same way.
Absolutely. That's actually another very huge area, which is the area of infrastructure that's surrounding these autonomous connected vehicles, as you mentioned, will be really of great benefit even to manual vehicles. I mean, for many years, in fact, this technology that led to the connected vehicle standards around something known as DCRC, which stands for Dedicated Short-Range Communication, that could supply infotainment and information to vehicle. You could imagine now information becoming like a fuel station as you pass by, specific spots within the highway or in urban areas. You actually get some critical information that's helping you. Could be anywhere from a recommendation. This is the best place to park, so you don't have to worry about, you know, where, you know, mm-hmm. what is the optimum, you know, minimum delay kind of parking for you and so on. Of course, when we have autonomous vehicles, we don't have to worry about that because they'll park themselves. So.
Well, it's really been, exciting to have you and your colleagues who are part of Canvas here, but also this connection to our undergraduate students and their and graduate students in this national, international competition. I think many people don't always recognize Michigan State for being a place that is doing this very fundamental and yet practical work. And to have it recognized at the highest level for our students is just terrific. So thanks very much for being a part of Team MSU.
Congratulations and thank you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Mark wants to go ride in the car.
Anytime, Mark.